spinner, vomiting blood from his 10 mouths, fell from his airplane. Just as a pious man falls to earth from the heavenly planets when the results of his pious activities are exhausted. Thereafter, all the women whose husbands had fallen in the battle, headed by Mandodari, the wife of Ravana, came out of Lanka. Continuously crying, they approached the dead bodies of Ravana and the other Rakshasas. Striking their breasts in affliction, because their husbands had been killed by the arrows of Lakshman, the women embraced their respective husbands and cried piteously in voices appealing to everyone. O my Lord, O Master, you epitomize trouble for others, and therefore you were called Ravana. Ravana means one who creates, one who makes many people cry. These names, Ravana, who was it? Dushana. These are very inauspicious names. And they're demoniac names. One who makes people cry. One who causes other people pain. One who is expert in bad activities. These different names that these demons have mean things like this. So Ravan means one who makes others cry. But now that you have been defeated, we also are defeated. For without you, the state of Lanka has been conquered by the enemy. To whom will it go for shelter? O greatly fortunate one, because Ravana, very interesting thing about Ravana, he was born a Brahmin, and he was an expert in the Vedas. He was, he actually knew all the Vedas off by heart. So he was a Vedic genius. But he felt, and he appreciated how nice it was, you can achieve so much through the Vedas, but he felt it's too much trouble. Let me just get all these things directly. Otherwise, Ravan was a most astonishing person. When Hanuman went over to Lanka to locate Mother Sita, then first of all he was wandering through the palace of Ravan, and he found Ravan sleeping. And he went and he was looking at this person. And Ravan looked so beautiful. Ravan looked so handsome. And beyond just being handsome, he looked not less than a demigod. And Hanuman thought, this can't be Ravan. I've made a mistake. This must be a demigod who's visiting Ravan. Because he looked absolutely, astonishingly beautiful, actually. Beautiful facial features, beautiful bodily features, beautiful hair. And of course he was asleep at the time, but because he was a great scholar, he was capable of speaking in the most impeccable fashion. It says that he could speak in such a way that day would become night and night would become day. So Hanuman thought, no, I've made a mistake. This isn't Ravan. This is a demigod. But then he saw one thing. He saw a hole in the chest of Ravan, which was made by the tusk of Airavata, Indra's elephant. And then he thought, oh, this wound, Ravana is famous for having a wound in his chest like this. So then he thought, actually, it must be Ravana. And then Ravana did something in his sleep, which made Hanuman convinced that, oh yes, it must be Ravana. You know what he did? He started snoring. So Hanuman thought, oh yes, he's snoring, this means mode of ignorance. So he's in the mode of ignorance despite so many other things. So therefore he must be Ravan. So, oh greatly fortunate one, you came under the influence of lusty desires, and therefore you could not understand the influence of Mother Sita. Now, because of her curse, you have been reduced to this state, having been killed by Lord Ramachandra. O pleasure of the Rakshasa dynasty, because of you, the state of Lanka, and also we ourselves now have no protector. By your deeds, you have made your body fit to be eaten by vultures, and your soul fit to go to hell. So, she's intelligent enough to recognize this fact. If anyone follows in the footsteps of Ravana, their bodies become fit to be eaten by vultures, and they, the person, the soul, will go to hell. So we'll end our reading here. Any comments or questions from anyone? Can you alert them? Any comments, questions? Are you ready? Okay. So we'll have a day of being absorbed in remembering Lord Ram and glorifying him in so many ways. So, and of course, during the day, there'll also be classes and questions and answers and so on, all focusing on Lord Ram. So try and take part in everything very enthusiastically and get into the mood of, because it is, after all, it's a birthday party. Yes, it's God's birthday party. Lord Ram's birthday party. So it should be a party. In a nice way. Not in, you know, some mundane materialistic way. But in a very nice transcendental way. In a very jolly and happy mood. But at the same time a philosophical mood. Understanding the position of Lord Ram. We should celebrate his birthday in a very festive and happy way. Jai Shri Ramachandra Bhagavan Ki, Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Ki, Shri Ram Naomi Mahotsava Ki, Gaur Premananda, Hari Bol. Good. So thank you all for coming to our festival, and thank you all for coming to our questions and answers tent. We are probably passing around a piece of paper and a pen, are we? Where has it reached? Oh, it's there. Okay, good. So you'll have opportunity to ask any questions you may like about this festival, about Lord Ram, about anything, actually. Anything connected with Krishna consciousness or Ram consciousness. Are these questions? Okay. So we do have a few questions already. And write your questions, and we'll get to those in a few minutes. Just to start off. Right. So we have a topic. just to get the ball rolling, so to speak. Topic is Hanuman, the great, or is it greatest devotee, or greatest? Oh, I see. The greatest devotee of Lord Ram. Very nice topic. I think you're all familiar with Hanuman, at least you know who we're referring to. Anyone have no idea who is Hanuman? Just never heard of him. I'm sure you've all heard of Hanuman. Hanuman's famous. I even heard about Hanuman before I became a Hare Krishna devotee. About 25 years ago, I heard about Hanuman. So Hanuman, the greatest devotee of Lord Ram. Now, of course, one might dispute that to start off with. Of course, accepting that Hanuman is certainly a very great devotee of Lord Ram, that's a fact. But the greatest, at least he's a very great devotee of Lord Ram. Sometimes in the Vedic scriptures, they use terminology like the greatest, the best, the most perfect. Sometimes these terms are used a little flexibly. For example, we understand that Krishna consciousness is perfect, but there are different degrees of perfection. There's perfect, there's more perfect. Can you imagine that? Something is already perfect, but then it can become more perfect than perfect. Isn't that quite something? Then something can be even most perfect. And believe it or not, there's no limit. It can become even more perfect than most perfect. So this is quite inconceivable, at least by material standards. If something is perfect, it's a very interesting point. If something is perfect and you change it, if it's already perfect, but you change it, then what have you done, actually? What will you make it? What would you say, Suren? No. Something material. If it's already perfect, then if you change it, yes. If it's already perfect, like 1 and 1 equals 2, it's not a very high level of information or anything, but 1 and 1 equals 2 is perfect, isn't it? Within its own sort of parameters, 1 and 1 equals 2 is perfect. So if you change it, 1 and 1 equals something other than 2, then you can only make it imperfect. You cannot improve on it. 1 and 1 equals 2, that is perfect, and that is that. That is that. But in spiritual life, we have the idea that something may be perfect. Perfect means there's absolutely no flaw. There's absolutely no lacking. It's complete. Totally complete. But still you can make it more perfect. So this is quite inconceivable by material standards, but it exists in Krishna consciousness. And is this water for me? As I mentioned, well, I'm not perfect in any way, and this is one of the symptoms that I have these coughing fits, and I'm trying to stop them. Anyway, I'm not perfect, so I or we can become perfect. But actually, on the level of perfection, there are degrees of perfection. Perfect, more perfect, most perfect, even more perfect, and it's unlimited. There are 5 relationships with Krishna, with the Supreme Lord. 5 different types of relationships. A neutral relationship, relationship as servant. Neutral means like the cows to Krishna, or Krishna's flute to Krishna. They all have a relationship with Krishna, but it's neutral. There's no real interaction. Not like a servant to a master. Then there's interaction. The servant is accepting a particular type of attitude and acting in relationship with the master. Then even higher than that is a friendly relationship. You can have God as your friend. Oftentimes people want a friend. We all need friends. But our friends let us down sometimes. Your friend may die, so that's a big letdown. Or even if your friend doesn't die, your friend may do something. Your friend may become a little envious of you somehow and may steal something from you. This happens. Or your friend may criticize you behind your back. Have you ever had that happen? Has anyone never had that happen? I'm sure we've had that experience. Sometimes your best friend may run off with your wife or your husband. Oh dear. But it happens. Actually, when you think about it, your best friend is the most likely person for your husband or wife to run off with, because they'll be with you most of the time. So your husband or wife will associate with them more than any other person that is connected to you. So it's quite likely that if your wife or husband are going to run off with someone else, they'll run off with your best friend. And this happens. So, but when Ram becomes your friend, then he never lets you down. He never lets you down. He's an infallible friend. Then Krishna or Ram, he may become your child. Just like Lord Ram, his parents are Dasarath and Kausalya. Dasarath, he's a person like us, but he has such a relationship with the Lord that the Lord is accepting the position just like his own child. Not that the Lord has become less than Dasarath. He remains the Lord, and Dasarath remains the humble servant or the humble devotee. But for the sake of their loving exchanges, Ram is acting as son. And Dasarath, as far as he's concerned, Ram is his son. He doesn't think that, oh yes, he's God, but he's just acting like my son. No, he thinks he's my son. Actually, all these relationships we have here within the material world, we all have our friends, and we may be working for someone, so we have a master. Or you may be a master and people may be working for you. You may be married, so you have your husband and wife and your children, like this. So where do these relationships come from? They're all perverted reflections of the same types of relationships which exist in the spiritual world with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, there's a parental relationship. Just imagine, if God becomes your son, he'll be the perfect son, the best son. And then God may also become your husband, as in the case of Sita, or even as in the case of the gopis in Vrindavan, he may become something like your boyfriend. An informal relationship, unofficial type of relationship between the sexes, but not like we know here within this material world, boyfriends and girlfriends. Not something which is of a questionable nature morally, but simply based on the sentiment of pure love and affection, the pure desire to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Incidentally, if any of you would like to come in, there's a number of seats here, so feel free, make yourselves more comfortable. So, all these relationships are perfect. All these relationships, like the cows with Krishna, those cows are eternally related with Krishna in a neutral relationship, and this is perfect. They're fully absorbed in their consciousness of God. But then someone who has a relationship as a servant, like Hanuman, his relationship with servant, with Ram is that he is the servant. Ram orders and he executes the order. You may know, how many of you have read Ramayana? A little? A few? Some of you. So you may know that after everything was done, Ram was feeling very pleased with Hanuman. So he wanted to express his gratitude and his affection. So he wanted to embrace Hanuman. Are you aware of that? He wanted to embrace Hanuman. But Hanuman was feeling that, how can I embrace Ram? Embracing goes on between equals. I can't embrace him like that. It would be a sign of familiarity. But because of the overwhelming affection of Lord Ram, Lord Ram just grabbed him and embraced him. And Hanuman also reciprocated by embracing the Lord back. But he was feeling a little odd, because he felt that I'm the servant. He's the master. Whenever I see him, I bow down. So, very clearly the relationship is not at all one of equal. So, the nature of a servant is like that. Feels very lowly, very humble. But then a friend to a friend, they may embrace very happily. Without feeling that, oh, how can I embrace him? What is my position? He's the boss. Can you imagine going to your boss and embracing him? Can you imagine that at work? No. Because you know he's the boss and you don't do things like that. Probably because he's a typical materialist and you are devotees, then you would probably think, why would I want to embrace him? He's just not the sort of person I want to embrace. But your husband or wife or your children or an intimate friend, someone you're closely associated with that you reveal your heart to sometimes, then you may embrace them. And then parents, their mood is even higher, that they are protecting the child. The servant feels that the master is higher, a friend feels that my friend is my equal, and the parent feels that my child is beneath me. So, there are these gradations of relationship with the Supreme Lord. But it is a fact that even having a relationship, like being one of Krishna's cows in Vrindavan, that is very elevated. That is actually perfect. Because that means the living entity is situated in his or her eternal relationship with the Lord. Perfect relationship in pure devotion to the Lord. So that's perfect. But having a relationship as servant is more perfect. It has something which is lacking in the relationship of neutrality. In neutrality, the devotee is not feeling inspired enough by the Lord's greatness that the devotee feels that I must do something for him, for the Lord. The devotee in neutrality is just thinking, the Lord is so great, let me just sit here and appreciate how great he is. Like that. But the servant is thinking that my Lord is so great, let me express my appreciation by doing something. So, to have a neutral relationship with the Lord in pure love is perfect. But to have a relationship as a friend, as a servant, is more perfect. And to have a relationship as a friend is most perfect, even more. And to have a relationship as a parent is even more perfect. And actually, Srimati Radharani and Sita Devi is an expansion of Srimati Radharani. So, Srimati Radharani's relationship with Krishna, or Sita's relationship with Ram, is the most perfect, but it's becoming even more perfect every day. So even that which is most perfect is becoming more perfect. and more perfect. And it's unlimited. So we're talking about Hanuman being the greatest devotee of the Lord. So yes, he is the greatest devotee. But there are devotees who are even greater. And then there are devotees who are even greater than those devotees. And Hanuman may be the greatest devotee, but he's becoming even greater a devotee. So this is all quite inconceivable. But it's very nice. It's very nice. So there's no limit to how much pleasure you can feel in Krishna consciousness. Everyone wants to feel very happy. So when you become very Krishna conscious, if you're chanting Hare Krishna very nicely, doing a lot of devotional service, hearing very nicely the glories of the Lord, then you become so happy that you think, I've never been more happy. I couldn't become more happy. But then you become more happy as you get even more absorbed. And it goes on and on and on. It's not like, for example, when you're smoking cigarettes. Why do people smoke cigarettes? Because they get some happiness from it. Otherwise, why would they do it? So they smoke the cigarette and they get some happiness, and it goes. Some of you may have had the experience. So then you have to smoke another one. And you get some happiness again, but generally it's a little less. So therefore a person, when they begin smoking, they may be satisfied or not satisfied, but they may feel that all they want to do is smoke 10 cigarettes a day when they start. But after a while they're smoking 20, and then 40, and then 60, and then 120. I don't know what the world record is, but I'm sure there's someone somewhere who's smoking 120 cigarettes a day. Why? Because he's chasing that elusive happiness, which he got when he initially started smoking, but now he doesn't really get it anymore. It's like that. Material pleasure is like that. It's described by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, that there's some pleasure in the beginning, but as time goes on, it gets less. You meet your husband or wife, and you think, oh, what a nice boy, what a nice girl. So nice. Then you get married, and then you get sort of used to having them around. And then after a while you think, well, just see how many defects this person has. I didn't realize, but this person's as stupid as me, or more stupid. I was hoping they were better than me, so they could help me. But then after a while, first of all, they occupy the same bed, then different beds, then different rooms. And then eventually they may just go their different ways. So life in the material world is like that. Who, after 50 years of being married, could say that I'm so excited about my husband or wife? Anyway, shouldn't say things like that, because you're all very nice people. But we're just making the point that things tend to go stale in material life. Of course, for the devotees, that's different, because their pleasure is higher. And in fact, spiritual pleasure is so nice that at first you get a little and you feel, oh, this is very nice. So then you decide, let me get more into it. And you get more into it, and it gets nicer and nicer and nicer. And it just goes on. There's no limit, actually. So, Hanuman is the greatest devotee, and he is becoming even greater. Hanuman is the greatest devotee, but there are devotees greater than him. And even the greatest devotee, ultimately, Srimati Radharani, is becoming greater by the day. So there's no limit, there's no cut-off point that you reach a certain level and you just can't go beyond. Not like that. It goes on and on and on, forever, eternally. So Hanuman, his greatness as a devotee is shown in many ways. One way, which I know we've mentioned, we've been visiting our various Namahatta groups over the last couple of weeks and talking about Ram and Hanuman to some extent. So one thing, one little pastime of Hanuman's with Ram, which we've been mentioning, which some great devotee means simply concerned to provide pleasure for the Lord without any personal interest. Personal interest means that I'll scratch your back as long as you scratch my back. I'll work for you, in other words, provide some pleasure for you, as long as you pay me. If you stop paying me, I'll stop working. And if I stop working, you'll stop paying. So this type of relationship, where you will only serve if you are served, this is not pure love. Like the husband is expected to provide, but if he feels tired of working, do any of you ever feel tired of working? Surrender. The rest of you, the rest of you seem to love it. Anyway, shame. So, what if the husband just decides that I'm fed up with this working, I just can't take it any longer, I'm stopping. And he tells the wife says, well, where's the money going to come from to buy the food and pay the rent? He says, well, I'm not going to get it, you get it. I'm just going to sleep. And you wake me up a couple of times a day and I'll eat. But you carry on doing all the things you're meant to do. So soon, unless the wife is, I don't know, but I don't think any wife would tolerate it, would they? Not in their right mind. Soon he'll be out in the street. Boot, isn't it? Because even though there's some affection, but it's not like pure love, that you can do anything, but I will serve you regardless. As Lord Chaitanya says, expressing the mood of Srimati Radharani, that you may make me broken-hearted by not being present before me. In other words, you may abandon me even. Or you may embrace me and embrace me so hard that it hurts. You may crush me in your embrace. But either way, you are always my worshipful Lord, unconditionally. So this is pure love. This is pure devotion. That whether Ram accepts the service of Hanuman, whether Ram praises Hanuman, thanks him, or whether Ram ignores him, he doesn't feel that, oh, today Ram ignored me, so today I'm not going to serve him until he expresses something towards me. No, otherwise I'm not going to serve him. Whatever happens, Hanuman will serve Ram and continue serving Ram regardless. So this is pure devotion. So one little story. It's a very interesting little story. There are many lessons to be learned. One day, this is after they got back from Lanka, Hanuman saw that Sita now was wearing kumkum in her parting. Are any of you ladies? Oh, there's one. Two. I see two. Anyway, at least two. Ladies, who are wearing kumkum? The rest of you aren't. Anyway, by traditional Vedic standards, it means you're not married. Or you consider yourself unmarried. If you don't wear it. So anyway, Hanuman saw that Sita was wearing this kumkum, and he'd not seen it before. As you know where this idea of kumkum comes from, the red marking, where it comes from is that traditionally, the warrior, the Kshatriya class, some of you may be Singhs, that means warrior class, traditionally. So the warriors, in order to gain a young lady as their bride, they would generally have to fight with some competitors who would also want the young lady as a bride. And they'd have to kill. And whoever survived would get the young lady as a bride. And then in order to show that she is now my wife, he would take blood from the dead bodies of those warriors, princes, and put it in her parting. So this is where the practice comes from. I don't know if any of you husbands are bold enough to do like that, or... anyway. The practice is still there with the kumkum. So Sita was wearing the kumkum. Hanuman asked, "Why are you wearing that?" Sita said, "Oh, because Ram likes it, and it's very auspicious. If the wife wears this, then it means the husband will live a long life." Some wives may want their husbands to expire soon so they can inherit. So they may make a point of not wearing it. But Sita wanted Ram to live a long time, so she was wearing that. And it was showing that I am Ram's. And Ram enjoyed seeing, oh yes, she's accepting her position as my wife. So he felt happy. So Hanuman said, "Oh, Ram likes it? It's auspicious for Ram?" And Sita said, "Oh yes, it's very nice. Ram likes it very much. And it's very auspicious for him." So Hanuman said, "Oh right, okay, just wait a minute." Hanuman disappeared. Hanuman came back a minute or two later, completely red, from head to toe. In fact, you couldn't even tell it was Hanuman. This red thing with two legs and a tail was moving around the palace. And Ram came, and he saw, "What is this?" Then he looked carefully and he saw, "Oh, that's Hanuman." So he asked Hanuman, "Why did you do that?" Hanuman said, "Oh, I heard that you liked it. I heard that it would be good for you. Very auspicious. You'll live longer." So Ram said, "Yes, well, that's true, but you don't have to do like that. It's all right." But Hanuman was ready to stay like that. All day, all night, all the next day. He was ready to just stay like that for the rest of his life. Because he knew that this will please Ram. So now, this is quite extreme. Who of us would do something like that? We might think, well, people will laugh at us. It's a little crazy to do something like that. But here, Hanuman is not thinking in these terms. Hanuman is not thinking, what will people think of me? Sometimes devotees don't want to wear tilak on their forehead, because they think people will wonder, who is this person? Why is this person wearing this marking on the forehead? Sometimes ladies feel that I'd rather not wear a sari because people may think it's a little funny, isn't it? Let me wear a Punjabi suit from Papat Lal Kara's. Free advertising. And a man may think, oh, I don't want to wear a dhoti. People will wonder. We had someone approach us yesterday in Port Shepstone, and they asked us that, "Are you followers of the new Messiah?" What? New Messiah? He believes, he's propagating the idea that men will start giving birth to children. And therefore, they should particularly wear the kind of robes, not exactly like what I'm wearing, but most of the men, they wear robes where there's like a tail bit which goes through between the legs and then is tucked in at the back of the waist. So she thought that the men will give birth to the babies, and that little bit which goes between the legs and comes up will catch the baby when it falls out. So, well, I never heard of that. But that's not the idea. But anyway, people may get some funny ideas. Different funny ideas. So therefore, a man who's a devotee, like you're all devotees, or so many of you are devotees, you may think, I couldn't wear a dhoti because people may think it's funny. But if we understand clearly that actually the Lord would like me to do this or to do anything, then we'll do it without any personal consideration, like Hanuman, that if it pleases the Lord for me to wear kumkum all over and be like that all the time. Hanuman is not thinking. Actually, the idea does not even occur to him that maybe people will think I look funny. And why am I doing like this? Hanuman doesn't consider it. But he is convinced that if Ram likes this, I'll do it. And that's all. Full stop. That is the end. And then he does it. So this is pure devotee. This is pure devotee. So we have to try and cultivate that mood of pure devotional service, following in the footsteps of Hanuman, who's the greatest devotee of Lord Ram. Such a great devotee. He doesn't care about any risk. He doesn't care about name or fame. He doesn't care about anything, except he cares completely for the pleasure of Lord Ram. He cares for that. And he cares for that absolutely. Absolutely, 100%. So we see in the pastimes of Hanuman, from time to time he exhibited that characteristic, being totally attached to Ram and totally prepared to do anything. Just like when Hanuman was to jump over to Lanka. You know that story? Hanuman was to jump over. Someone had to go over to see if Sita was there. So Hanuman, he thought he could do it, but he wasn't sure. He wasn't really sure. But he was ready to try. And even the other monkeys, so many of them, they knew they couldn't do it. But still, if Ram wanted them to try, they'd try. Even though the likelihood of them succeeding was quite remote. And actually, it was more likely they would die, land in the middle of the sea and drown. But they were ready. If Ram said, all right, you try, just try anyway. So they would have done it. So this is pure devotion. Of course, the Lord is very kind to his devotees. So he doesn't tell them to do things like that, which he knows they can't do, and in this way cause them suffering. Or like in the case of Ram, of Hanuman, covering himself with kumkum, Ram didn't tell Hanuman that, okay, very good, you stay like that. Every day you just paint yourself red. No. Ram told Hanuman that that's okay, thank you very much, but you just take the red off and you just stay like you normally are, and that'll be okay. So the devotee is prepared to do anything for the Lord, but the Lord is very kind, so he won't place the devotee in a position where the devotee is going to be to suffer. Anyway, Hanuman, he was prepared to try, even though he wasn't really sure whether he was going to be able to make it, or at least if he did make it, it would be quite exhausting. He wasn't sure if he would have the strength left to jump back. But still, he was ready to try. So this is pure devotion. So he jumped. And he made it. Of course, we know that on the way he met various obstacles. But he managed to surpass those obstacles. And then he landed on Lanka. He didn't know where to look. But he was sneaking around. Hanuman is a brahmachari. You know what a brahmachari is? Unmarried young man, not like a bachelor, but he's actually made a commitment to celibacy, at least to the point at which he may get married. Until that point, he's strictly celibate. Not like a bachelor who trying to play around like that. So he had to find Sita. It was night. So where do you look at night? In the middle of the night, if you're looking for someone, where would you have to look? You'd have to look in the bedrooms. So strict brahmachari has to go into the bedrooms of the women. We don't encourage this at all. But Hanuman knew that I have to do this. I have no choice. I can't just be here in broad daylight. Everyone will see me. I have to sneak around at night so I can secretly locate Sita Devi. So he was going through and he was seeing all these women. You know how many wives Ravana had? Anyone know? Approximately? Approximately 12,000. Amazing. 12,000. From all different planets, even some from different species of life. Some were half snake and half woman. Quite a little bizarre. So Hanuman was going around seeing all these extraordinary people. Some of them were in the practice, I don't know if it's done very much in Indian society, of shaving their eyebrows off and then painting on like multicolored eyebrows. So Hanuman was looking, wow, look at this. Red, green, blue, yellow, purple eyebrows. They looked a little closer and saw, there isn't any eyebrow. It's paint. And he was wondering, why do they do this? Then finally he saw, he went through all the bedrooms, but Sita was not there. So he was thinking, well, what can I do? I'm going to have to go back. But then he thought, no, I can't give up. I have to keep on looking. So he kept on. Finally he found Sita Devi in the Ashok Garden. And as he was there, he saw Ravana come in. We were talking about this morning. Ravana, of course, Ravana had 10 heads. If you ever see anyone with 10 heads, we wouldn't hold it against you if you felt a little surprised. 10 heads. But Ravana, even though he had 10 heads, and he was a big demon, Rakshasa. Rakshasa means cannibal. Some of you may eat meat, and you know that we don't advocate that. But anyway, that's one thing. Someone may eat meat. And to be a vegetarian is better, actually. That's a fact. But compared to being a cannibal, being just a regular meat eater is not bad at all. Relatively speaking, I mean, it's not too bad, at least. Being a cannibal, oh, even if you're a meat eater and you hear someone's a cannibal, you'll think, oh, that's very bad, isn't it? I hope so. So, Ravana was a cannibal. He enjoyed eating human flesh. He would look in a crowd of people. He would look and think, let me see the thighs, the arms, and wherever, you know, the best flesh is. And he'd evaluate, a nice plump one. Shall we bribe him, or what should we do? What do you call it? Rare, yes, medium rare. Raw, even. Oh, isn't it amazing that people could think like that? Actually, someone who's a vegetarian, they, in certain regards, they think like that towards people who are meat eaters, that how could they do like that? Because it's not very nice to live from the dead bodies of innocent animals. That's a fact. Some nice little innocent animal. Some of you have dogs at home, right? Cats, fish in your aquariums. So if someone comes along and tells you, look, I just killed your dog and I bribed up his legs and here you are. Would you think, oh, wonderful? No, you'd think, oh, What a nasty thing to do. Kill my dear little dog. So every animal is dear to, they have their own circles. Friends, husbands, wives, children. Anyway, to be a cannibal is really bad. So Ravana was a rakshasa, a cannibal. He preferred human flesh. But despite being very inauspicious in that way, a very low character, because of previous good activities prior to this lifetime as Ravana, in his previous life, some of his activities had been very pious. So, Ravan was very beautiful, despite having 10 heads. He actually looked very beautiful. So Hanuman was going around the palace, looking in all the bedrooms. Finally, he came to Ravan's bedroom, and there was Ravan. And he was thinking, maybe this is Ravan. But he thought, he saw Ravan, and he thought, no, no, must be a demigod, because he's so beautiful. Actually, it said that he looked almost identical to Lord Indra's younger brother. And Lord Indra's chief of the demigods. Beneath Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, chief of the demigods. Anyway, Ravana came in when Hanuman found Sita, and Ravana was trying to coerce her, that you surrender to me. And he told her, I give you a month. If you don't surrender to me, in 1 month, I'll have you for breakfast. And he was serious. He was quite serious. I'll have you for breakfast, actually. So Hanuman was feeling, oh, this is very bad. And he wanted to fight Ravana immediately. But then he thought, no, no. Actually, Lord Ram has personally vowed to kill this man. So I don't want to do something which may interfere with that vow. So Hanuman came and identified himself to Sita when Ravana had left. He convinced her that, yes, actually, I am really the servant of Ram. Then some of the demoness wardens of Sita came and they saw, oh, here's this monkey. What's this monkey doing here? And they wanted to chase him away. But Hanuman, he started, actually, he took a couple of them and broke their heads off. Hanuman, he's a real tough. Even though they were women. Kshatriya is not allowed to kill women or harm women. According to the Vedic standard, a woman cannot be punished. Isn't that good for the ladies? Cannot be chastised, cannot be punished, even if she kills. Now, anyway, don't get any ideas, but she cannot be punished. So much for women's liberation, equal rights as men, so you can be punished like a man. Anyway, but Hanuman, he was thinking, I'm no Kshatriya, I'm a monkey. And we monkeys, we don't have to follow these rules and regulations. So he took a couple of them, broke their heads off. And then the others ran off to Ravan. Well, actually, they ran off to get the person in charge of the Ashok Garden. And he came back and he told he told Hanuman, hey, you monkey, you come here. Hanuman told him, no, you come here. So the man in charge of the garden, he was feeling very uptight. This clever monkey thinks he's smart. So he came over to him and he opened his mouth wide to yell some abuse at Hanuman. And you know what Hanuman did? He did something shocking. He urinated in the man's mouth. Yes. Because he was thinking, I'm a monkey. Kshatriya would never do such a thing. Human being would never do such a thing. But Hanuman was thinking, I've been here for so long, and I haven't been able to pass water. So, let me relieve myself. So urinated in the man's mouth. Monkey urine. The man was completely horrified, and he just ran to Ruthven. He told Ruthven, there's a disaster. Terrible. In the Ashok Garden. Ruthven said, oh, who is it? Indra? Agni? One of the demigods? Shiva? Of course he liked Shiva. But one of the demigods has come to attack me? The man said, no, it's a monkey. Ruthven said, what? You're waking me up for a monkey? What do you think you're doing? And then the man explained, but he urinated in my mouth. So Ruthven, of course, thought that was rather amusing. Anyway, he said, all right, look, I won't come myself. But he summoned one big demon called Jambumali. Jambumali means he who sleeps in liquor. He was very attached to drinking. So what he would do, he would drink and fall asleep. Then he'd wake up, he'd want to drink again, he'd drink and fall asleep. This was his lifestyle. But he was getting tired of having to get up out of bed, get another bottle, open it, and drink it. So he had his bed in a pond of liquor. So whenever he'd wake up, he'd just roll over, drink, and roll back and fall asleep again. So Ruthven called for Jambumali, told him, there's an emergency in the Ashok Garden. You've got to go there immediately. This person just broke off the heads of some of my female assistants. So Jambumali, he got very fired up. That, oh, a good fight? Who is it? And he also asked, is it Indra, chief of the demigods? Is it Varuna? Is it Agni? Who is it? one of the Gandharva warriors? Is it an army of warriors? Ruthven said, no, it's a monkey. Jambumali said, what? A monkey? I'm going back to sleep. But then Ruthven explained, no, this is no ordinary monkey. This is a special monkey. So Jambumali went there and he challenged that, all right, you monkey, you come with me. Hanuman, of course, wouldn't agree. So Jambumali thought, well, I'll show you something. Jambumali was saying, I'm such a big warrior. I have mystic powers. I can do anything. Hanuman said, oh, you have mystic powers. You show me. So Jambumali said, all right, I'll show you. I'll make myself bigger. Hanuman said, I can do that also. So Jambumali made himself very big, miles high. And Hanuman, who had been standing right in front of him, Hanuman was also expanding his body. So Jambumali was looking. Where's Hanuman? He was looking down. Where's Hanuman? In front of him, all he could see were these two brown, fuzzy-looking, round things. So he thought, this can't be Hanuman. This is not Hanuman's face. Come in out of the rain. Come in and sit down, or come in and stand up, or get out of the rain. Yeah, move forward. Try. There's also a couple of chairs up here. This is our arrangement, actually, to get everyone into the tent. So, Jambumali decided, I'll expand myself further. So he went up higher and higher and higher. And then he stopped and he looked down. Where's Hanuman? No Hanuman. And he looked ahead and all he could see were these same fuzzy round things, but they got bigger now. And he was wondering, what on earth is this? Where's Hanuman? So Hanuman could see
that Jambu Mali was a little confused. So Hanuman called out to Jambu Mali, "Those are my kneecaps you're looking at." And Jambu Mali looked up, and miles up in the sky was Hanuman's face. And Hanuman was just laughing at him. "You think you're a mystic."